keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back. Hope everyone had a great weekend. And I know we did here at the Anti-Media. Took it easy, and did some work, of course, keeping things up to date. Make sure you check out the website, theantimedia.org, for the latest updates from all over the country and all over the world. I'm joined tonight with my awesome guest, Jake Anderson. How you doing tonight, bro?
Good, buddy. Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff tonight. We're going to get DB on the show, who missed out a little bit last week. DB, how you doing tonight, bro?
Hey, bro, doing pretty good, man. Just watching things change as usual in the world.
And like they say, the only constant is change, right? So yeah, we're gonna be covering a few topics real quick. Then we're gonna have a special guest on from Mint Press News to talk about the Middle East and what's going on with ISIS and Syria and the refugee crisis and several other things. If you feel like joining the conversation, feel free to call us. You can join the show by calling 718-717-8296. And if you do call, make sure your mic is muted and your radio is turned off. Otherwise, we'll get some feedback, and we don't want to have feedback because we'll have to hang up on you. We want to do that. Also, we are on the show. We're on this show live Monday through Friday. Jake, me, DB, and Manny are here Monday and Wednesday. And then SM Gibson and Shannon Madden Tuesday and Thursday, and LeVon, of course, on Fridays, mixing it up a little bit of different shows each day. Of course, we're always here Monday and Wednesday with the hard-hitting stuff that everybody's got to know about that's not being talked about by the mainstream. Also want to welcome Manny Aguilar to the show. How you doing tonight, Manny?
Thank you, Nick. I'm doing great. A lot of stuff happening. Busy, looking forward to the premiere down here on the 43 in LA on Friday, and of course I'll be down there your way in San Diego, so everything's looking good. I need to ask somebody, how can I clone myself a couple of times, because man, I tell you, sometimes I wonder if I can be in three places at one time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I'd be down to help clone you too, that way we can have one of you and down here in San Diego with us, and one of you in LA, and we send the other one out on the road.
No, you just deploy your consciousness. You outsource your mind to like a remote machine. You don't need to clone yourself. You just kind of.
We could put your mind onto one of those quad rotor drones.
Yeah,
and we could just fly you up and down the West Coast whenever we need you. You know what I mean?
And you can double his pizza delivery.
Yeah.
I hear you. So shout out to DV also and Jake Anderson.
Hey, buddy.
So quickly, I'm going to go over a couple headlines on the anti-media. California legislature has passed a bill. Now it's going to the governor's desk, and it's going to help demilitarize the police. And the funny, I guess this isn't really funny, but it's just a weird tidbit. It's going to ban the cops from getting grenade launchers and tracked armored vehicles, so basically tanks. So I guess that's a good thing. The fact that other departments around the country are still able to get grenade launchers and tanks from program 1033 from the DOD, that's a little concerning. But at least here in California, we won't be having tanks and grenade launchers in the streets anymore. Covered by Derek Bros today as well. Actually, yesterday, a new study out of MIT warns about the dangers of geoengineering, weather modification. It's being talked about pretty seriously right now because of all the climate change. All the stuff going on with the climate right now and the droughts and this extreme weather events. So they're talking about geoengineering to try to, first of all, provide more rainfall and deal with the global warming and things like that. But there's been plenty of scientists recently that have come out and said, look, we don't know enough about geoengineering to deploy this technology without, any unknown repercussions. Of course, they're already practicing geoengineering in many places. In the U.S., I mean, there's like several testing places that they're doing geoengineering. Well, then, of course, you got all the people that have been, worrying about the chemtrail stuff for a long time. Of course, that's a lot of that stuff is speculation and that kind of thing. But geoengineering is very real.
Well, the jet stream flows east to west at about 300 miles an hour, Nick. And if China or Russia, those are the only two countries that probably could make a harp themselves, could disrupt the jet stream and make all the rain fall in the ocean and make a huge giant warm blob you can see from a satellite in space, then it stands to reason we're maybe being a victim of weather wars.
The idea of weather modification is funny to me. Like, let's not modify our cultural, socioeconomic behavior that's causing climate change. Let's double down and use technology to change the effect. It's not treating the disease. It's not treating the source of the problem. It's treating the effects of it.
Exactly.
And the antidote is Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, man. The fix for it is sustainable energy, and they don't want that. We're going to get into that tonight with the petrodollar and stuff, because that's what our special guest is going to be talking about, partially at least. Other stuff from over the weekend. Last Friday, hopefully you didn't miss out on the show. Scott and I actually hosted the show on Friday, and we did a special event for 9/11, and we talked about nine liberties lost since 9/11. Awesome article by Kerry Wedler posted on September 11th. The other 9/11 that the media doesn't tell you about, which is what happened down in Chile in a CIA-backed military coup, which ended up victimizing tens of thousands. In fact, some estimates go as high as hundreds of thousands of people victimized in Chile by a U.S.-backed military junta. All because a democratically elected president nationalized the copper industry. So we decided that we're going to go overthrow that government. And 30,000 people got tortured. And, the whole time we were supporting them, they were allowing our industry to go ream all the copper out of the country and that kind of thing. So that's definitely one thing that's similar with what we're going to talk about tonight, economic empire. Economic imperialism, and that's basically what most of our foreign policy is based on right now. Now, the thing is that they sell us all these wars based on, oh, we're going to go free these people, we're going to liberate Iraq and all these things. But unfortunately, the truth of the matter is a lot more sinister, and most times it's just corporate imperialism. We're going to get into that. Let's see, what else do we got here from over the weekend? Oh, yeah, there was a declassified documents that came out regarding the CIA relationship with Hollywood.
This is amazing.
There was a movie called Zero Dark Thirty, which is about the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden, and it shows that the CIA was rubbing elbows with Hollywood in that film, and just kind of goes to show the amount of influence the CIA has in the propaganda in Hollywood, and also how gullible the CIA is as well, because the filmmakers actually, I don't want to call it bribing, let's just call them favors, but they gave one agent what were quote-unquote black pearl earrings. Turns out they were just painted. They weren't even real. And then an expensive bottle of tequila, which turned out that it wasn't even an expensive bottle of tequila. And I mean, just petty bullshit.
I hear the CIA was raiding the craft service table too on the set of the film. You know, they wanted all the Twizzlers and pretzels for themselves.
It was because it was officially organic and it didn't meet the criteria.
Oh, yeah. I want to give you an update, Nick. Also, mounting a million signatures in Mexico right now, as we speak, came out of down there in Acapulco, my friends, contacts, blah, blah, blah. They're basically really getting momentum in doing what Guatemala did to get their president. Now they're going to try to get a million signatures because that's what they need to really go into trying to get Peña Nieto on the president and stuff like that and kick him out and stuff like that, you know. So that's one of the things I wanted to bring an update. And also the article that was, I sent it your way, obviously, about the article that came out about where a lot of people think the Arellano brothers don't have control in Tijuana. They still have control, but they have other cartels that have moved in and stuff like that. And there have been a lot of killings in Tijuana this past week and stuff like that. So that's kind of a sad thing to say in something like that and all that, you know. And there's one thing that I'm disgusted with that's happening in the United States. What is with the damn fashion police, dude? You tell me if I want to wear my shirt that's got, something, or it's too short. Or what if I decide to be a cross-dresser tomorrow and wear a mini dress? It'd be legal in some places not to wear a mini dress anymore and stuff like that. I mean, what's up with that,
Yeah, that's a really odd story out of Alabama. There's a city that's trying to ban Daisy Dukes and short skirts. And the funny part is that, it's a lot of these guys down in the South that are kind of harping on Sharia law and like, oh my God, they're going to bring Sharia law with these refugees that are coming over from Syria. It's like, well, dude, unfortunately the Sharia law is already there down in the South, man. You can't, they're doing this really strict stuff. And I mean, it's just so hypocritical, man. They're so worried about religion overtaking the government while at the same time basing government on their own religion and, that kind of thing. And it's just such a hypocritical situation, I guess you could say. But, I mean,
aren't government and religion separate?
They're supposed to be, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's in the Constitution.
Yeah, well, there's something in there about that.
That's just an old, stupid document anyway. We don't need that.
Well, according to the politicians, it is. I mean, they only use it when it's convenient for them. Other times, they wipe their asses with it, literally. I mean, we should start putting
literally.
We should start stocking the congressional restrooms with toilet paper that looks like the Constitution.
That is brilliant, dude.
So yeah, man. I mean,
or maybe Trump's face, that would help.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hey. I wouldn't be opposed to that. I know Manny would support that.
Trump juxtaposed over the Constitution, like Biff from Back to the Future 2. Got to get that reference in there.
Yeah, Biff. I mean,
definitely. I want to do a shout out to our Rainbow Brothers that had a good party out there on Nick's neighborhood down in the hood. So I hope everything was good for you guys out there in Chula Vista.
Yeah, man, we had our first South Bay Pride event down here, the Gay Pride event going on. They have them all over the country, but we had the first one down here in South Bay, which is kind of conventionally not really open to that kind of thing. Really nice event, really peaceful, no cops to bug anybody, and it was really good. It was really, really inclusive event, everybody getting along, everybody partying, having fun, and that's what's good about having this newer culture, this younger culture of people that are really open-minded. It's really nice to go somewhere where nobody's judging you and nobody's, looking at you weird and everybody's kind of just cool with everybody. And that's really what it was all about this weekend at the South Bay Pride event here in Chula Vista. It's really nice. It's really nice. Yep. It's really nice to experience, all the good energy and the good vibes that come along with a lot of the LGBT community and really just, open arms, man, to everybody for the most part. And, I can't speak, highly enough of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're gonna be joined in a few seconds by a special guest from Mint Press News. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are familiar with it. They have an awesome news operation. I think they're based out of Minneapolis. And they cover a lot of really in-depth topics on the Middle East and plenty of other, anti-establishment standpoints and viewpoints and things like that. We're being joined now by Manar Muawesh. How are you doing tonight, Manar?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing really well. We're just covering some of the headlines from over the weekend. But we wanted to bring you on tonight because I was really intrigued by an article that you wrote about a week ago, regarding what's going on in Syria and the civil war, the refugee crisis, ISIS, and covers a lot of things. Really in-depth article. We shared it on the Anti-Media, and a lot of people read it, so I'm sure some people are already a little bit brushed up on it. But anyway, we're hoping you can come on tonight and maybe go a little in-depth on that. But first of all, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and about Mint Press News, real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. Of course, I'm a very big fan of Anti-Media, and I've been following your work for a very long time, and it's very refreshing to see such a great activist movement leading the way in journalism. But Mint Press News is an independent online watchdog journalism organization, and we focus our coverage on issues pertaining to how economics basically shapes our policies at home and abroad, and we try to give all of our coverage, through the lens of social justice and human rights. And what inspired me to start Mint Press about 4 years ago was the fact that people are so thirsty for real news. I mean, a recent Gallup poll showed that over 60% of Americans don't even trust the media. I mean, it's very obvious and very clear that it's sensationalized, it's not working in the interest of the public, and people just simply don't trust the media, and it's time for, a watchdog-style media to help keep people informed. Just to give you a little background about myself, my background is in broadcast journalism, and I started as a broadcaster in Minneapolis. I became the first American woman to wear the hijab to anchor the news in the United States. But my interest in journalism goes back further, of course. I lived 4 years under Israeli occupation and apartheid. And because of those experiences, after we moved back to the United States, I turned to the media, of course, to get, information about what was going on overseas in the Middle East, in Palestine. And the media was flat out lying and, just basically showing that Palestinians were, terrorists and they were just an other. And that's why I started Mint Press, is to give people that live under war zones a voice and, the underprivileged a voice. So that's what inspired me to start Mint Press.
Awesome. And I think you guys are doing a great job. And I've been seeing your posts get more and more people reading them, and it's getting a lot of traction even on Google News, and I see your articles all the time when I'm on Google News looking at what is being pushed out there. I'm really glad that you're able to kind of decode what's going on with the Israeli-Palestinian struggle going on over there, because as you mentioned, the corporate media coverage is just so utterly biased against the Palestinians and in favor of Israel. And, a lot of people don't realize how much money, mm-hmm. the everyday person in the U.S. that pays taxes, which is everybody that lives here. I don't care if you're an immigrant. I don't care if you're born here. I don't care. If you're here in the U.S., you're paying taxes. And those taxes inevitably end up going, and a lot of it, billions of it, in fact, end up going to Israel, where they use it to
right.
subjugate many people in Palestine, and of all different religions. It's not only Muslims being oppressed over there. It's many Christians in
exactly.
Palestine as well that are not talked about very much by the media, mm-hmm. because that would be really inconvenient for their narrative.
Ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Manny.
I was going to ask the question to the sister if she knows anything more about it. Is I just saw something about in Egypt that they basically shot a missile at some Mexican tourists. Do you know anything about that?
I'm having a very hard time hearing you. Could you repeat that?
I saw something today that caught my attention, and I was wondering if you can basically elaborate on it and know anything more about it. I saw where Egypt, with a missile, they hit some tourists from Mexico City and killed them.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Egypt's military is notorious. I mean, much of their military has been, you know, trained by the CIA. I mean, Sisi, I believe, worked for the CIA. So there's no question that, you know, the military responds in Egypt with brute force, very similar to the way Israel responds when anything is perceived as a threat. You know, Egypt is a police state. It's a security state. And anything that poses some sort of, you know, perceived threat, they're going to attack with brute force. I mean, in fact, just a couple of days ago, Amnesty International released a report that I think it was like a 10-year-old Syrian refugee who was trying to board a ship who was escaping war-torn Syria was shot by Egyptian soldiers. And so these countries that, you know, that use this kind of brute force are the United States' biggest arms dealers. They're buying our weapons en masse, and they're using them to, of course, just completely massacre and destabilize their own countries and control their countries. I mean, it's very, very, very sad situation.
Yeah, and Manny, I'm glad you brought that up. One thing I noticed about this, the what went down in Egypt, and yeah, it was a few Mexican nationals were gunned down by the or blown up by the Egyptian military. One thing that we don't see in the media is a condemnation of the Egyptian government. We don't see a condemnation of Egyptian policy. Now, keep in mind, now even though the Egypt recently had an election, the current government took power in a more or less in a form of a military coup, and now the general that more or less led that coup is now the president, and the Egyptian military controls something like 40% of the Egyptian economy, and to top it all off, the U.S. provides billions of dollars in military aid to the Egyptians. So there's a good chance that the weapons used to kill those Mexican nationals were actually just given to Egypt with financed by, you know, our tax dollars, just like Israel is. It's so hypocritical, the media coverage. If it would have been, you know, Assad that would have done that, I mean, the entire would have been headline news, and oh my God, we got to condemn Assad, right. And should we do airstrikes to, you know, because they killed these guys, you know? But no, this is Egypt. Egypt is in our back pocket, our government's back pocket, so they don't get any media treatment. They don't get any condemnation. No one's going to say anything. It was headline news for like 5 minutes, and then it was buried, and that was it. So anyway, I want to get into this article, Manar. It's titled Migrant Crisis and Syria War Fueled by Competing Gas Pipelines. Now, we've actually talked about this on the show several times, and we've kind of scratched the surface on it. So I think our listeners are going to be a little bit, you know, they already know about it a little bit. So I think that this article, hopefully everyone can get over to Mint Press News and first of all read the article, because it's very, very in-depth, and it ties together a lot of the pieces that aren't just the stuff that we're not being told. Because keep in mind that this whole Syrian war, the Syrian civil war, and we've been covertly backing this civil war since day one. You know, even there's documents showing since 2009, thanks to WikiLeaks, you know, that the U.S. was financing propaganda, anti-Assad propaganda in Syria, being broadcast from London into local television in Syria, and, you know, a lot of anti-government propaganda to stir up this unrest. And then as soon as the Arab Spring popped off, the U.S. went in there and started covertly trying to arm these rebels and arm the protesters and really try to start overthrowing that government over in Syria. Regime change, you know, this is textbook stuff. The U.S. has been doing it. We talked about it on Friday on 9/11. We talked about how in 1973 the CIA helped back the Chilean coup. And so this is exactly what they were trying to do in Syria. Now, they were hoping for a quick regime change. It didn't happen. It's turned into this really bloody civil war, especially because Russia backs Assad and that kind of thing. But this article really ties all this stuff together, because we're told that we're in there spreading democracy. We're saving the Syrian people. We're not, you know, we're on the side of freedom over here. This is what our government tells us. This is what the media tells us. They tell us Assad is this horrible guy. And I don't want to mix anything up here. Assad, yes, he's a dictator. But at the same time, the U.S. is an oligarchy. I don't think we really have much of a moral high ground to go and tell people how to run their governments, especially when we have the biggest, you know, prison population in the world and the highest poverty rates. I don't think we really have moral authority over any government to go tell them what to do.
Right.
This narrative, I think, is just kind of falling apart at the seams. And what it really comes down to, just like almost all other foreign policy with the United States, is economic imperialism. And Manar, can you tell us a little bit about the economic, the economic headwinds that are going on in Syria, and why is this whole thing happening?
Well, absolutely. Well, and just to sum it really up, is this war that we see today raging on across the Middle East is a war that has been fomented by competing regional allies, and because they are major U.S. arms customers, they have a lot of say in what they and how much they can pull the United States into these wars. And most notably, if we look at countries like Israel, even more than Saudi Arabia, Iran and Syria and Hezbollah, which are the kind of regional access that have stood up against U.S. imperialism, have been Israel's biggest target in the region. They're the last standing pillars that have stood up against Israel's occupation in Palestine. And so if you actually look at the documents released by WikiLeaks, in 2006, it actually revealed in Julian Assange did a recent interview on RT, and he actually broke down these leaks, and he explained how all of what we're seeing happening in Syria today was actually direct orders given by the Israeli government in 2006 to overthrow the Syrian government, and for two major goals. The first one is to destabilize Syria, specifically to weaken Iran and Hezbollah. And the second reason, of course, is because Israel is, just like the United States, it's an imperialist state, and it's a militarized state, and it needs resources, it needs energy. And where it's getting its energy currently is from the Golan Heights. It's stolen Syrian land from the Golan Heights that Israel seized in 1967. The other place it gets a lot of its resources, of course, is Gaza, and of course from Sudan and Kurdistan. And those, you know, areas are very much unstable locations. And so that's the first player in that conflict. In these plans between Israel and the United States, the discussion was the only way to overthrow the Assad government was to use religious sectarianism, because Syria is a very, very religious state. And something that the Syrian government, Hezbollah, and Iran all have in common is that they have ties to the Shiite religion. And so the only way to sell war, of course, to the public is to create some sort of enemy. We don't go and tell people we're going to wage a war for economic resources. Nobody would jump on board and say, yeah, we're going to go bomb these countries because we want their oil, or we want their resources. But we go and we agree and we support these wars if we say that there is this common enemy, there's this evil in the world, there are these oppressors, these dictators that we need to go overthrow, and we need to bring democracy, as you said. And so during this process, apart from Israel's interests, of course, Saudi Arabia is the major oil supplier in the world. It basically dominates the oil markets. And so for Saudi Arabia's biggest competition is also Iran, because Iran is the second largest oil producer in the world. Iran also has something that no one else in the Middle East has, which is gas. And so if Iran were to be strengthened from this Iran deal, from these economic sanctions would be lifted, Iran, of course, would become a major superpower in the region. And, of course, because Iran is anti-imperialist and it has spoken up very loudly against Israel's occupation of Palestine and U.S. imperialism, giving Iran any sort of economic power would basically cause a power shakeup in the region. So Israel and Saudi Arabia united in this cause to weaken Iran, and the only way to do that was through its partners in the region, through its allies. And of course, Qatar and Turkey want to have a pipeline that goes right through Syria that would provide some energy for Europe. And, of course, Iran and Syria have a pipeline for gas that wants that they agreed that would run through Syria as well, that would provide energy for European countries. And so these two competing gas lines, because Assad said no to Qatar and Turkey, they jumped on board to Israel and Saudi Arabia's war. And, of course, all of these nations together are the United States allies, and all they needed to do was basically give the thumbs up, and that's what we saw happen in Syria. Just a long story short.
And, you know, Minar, this is DB, and you know what's crazy is that it parallels this massive find they found off the coast of Israel, and part of the reason they went into Gaza and are trying to wipe it out
exactly.
is this Leviathan gas field that together
exactly.
combined with Saudi Arabia knock Iran out of the picture completely, and that's why they want them gone. So it's this massive
exactly.
geopolitical chess game going on, and because the American people and really any people are never going to say, yeah, go ahead and invade and kill 1.5 million Iraqis so that we can knock them out as an oil producer mm-hmm. for the Saudis so they can corner the market, we would never
exactly.
have gotten the response without 9/11. So there you go, people.
Right. Exactly. And I think, you know, everybody has their eyes on Syria, what's happening in Syria, rightly so. But really what this all boils down to is an attempt to really corner Iran and weaken Iran, destabilize Iran because of its economic because it's on its way to becoming an economic superpower. And I'm not talking about any economic superpower. I'm talking about economic superpower on the same level as China. And that's a very, very big deal for the region.
And they also represent the Persian Empire. And you have to go back even to the Crusades, as insane as that sounds, because the same people are running things on both sides. Think about it as a holy mm-hmm. war in that way, too.
Right. Right, right. So,
I think, Minar,
go ahead. Yep.
I wanted to see. I have this. I see some other headwinds flowing out of the region that kind of tie back into the U.S. policy's larger scheme of things, which has been mm-hmm. for a long time is to isolate Russia, right? And so they've been working to isolate Russia for a really long time, ever since the Soviet times, the Cold War times, and all that. And ever since the USSR fell, they've still been working to make sure that Russia can be contained. And of course, that definitely has something to do with what's going on in Ukraine.
Yep.
In Ukraine, now keep in mind that most of Russia's natural gas pipelines run through Ukraine, so it's not a huge surprise that that's where NATO decided to make its move. And the U.S., you know, we've sent training and we're starting to send weapons to Ukraine to go fight the people that sympathize with Russia in the East. Now, one thing that I've noticed here is that if they're going to cut Russia out of the equation, well, Europe needs gas, right? And so this, to me, also ties in this whole conflict in Syria, because all the pipelines
right.
have to go, all the pipelines that are coming from the Arab states have to run through Syria to get through Turkey and to get all the way up into Europe. So
mm-hmm.
it seems like to me the U.S. is also backing all of this action, not only because of our allies like Saudi Arabia and their interests, but also to help try to isolate Russia. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think you've hit the nail on the bucket. I mean, this is killing two birds with one stone. We've isolated Russia's allies in the Middle East, and again, these allies are not based on ideologies. It's always based on economics and oil trading and resources. But now we've isolated Syria and Iran, Russia's allies in the region, and so Turkey and Qatar. want to build a very, very big gas pipeline and oil pipeline that would run through Turkey, or through Syria, and then again through Turkey that would supply Europe. And obviously, if that were the case, this would kick Russia out in the cold along with Iran. So it's really killing two birds with one stone. So you're absolutely right. And Turkey is playing a really, really dirty game in this whole thing. So I've been watching the media really idolize Turkey, including Middle Eastern media and Turkish media, because, Erdogan has come out as like this Muslim Brotherhood savior who's helping all these refugees. But in fact, you know, even within the refugee crisis, we have to look at, you know, everything boils down to basic economics. And even within this refugee crisis, people don't just take in refugees for no reason to help them. They use them as very cheap labor. And so Turkey will definitely be utilizing that because Turkey is kind of this, you know, has very much, you know, China-like ambitions, Ottoman-like ambitions. And so if this pipeline gets built and it goes through Syria, then all of the U.S. allies win, and its supposed and perceived foes, which are Russia and Iran and Syria, will lose, and the United States will get what it wants.
Exactly. And so that's one thing I just want everyone out there listening to remember is that, you know, and I know we harp on this all the time, but we're always sold these wars on moral grounds. But in the end, they almost 99% of the time, it boils down to economics and establishing trade routes. Like, you know, a long time ago, it used to be about, you know, shipping lanes in the ocean and that kind of thing. Now they're trying to build shipping lanes for oil pipelines and that kind of stuff. And so we got to just be wary of any time the U.S. government says that it's going to go and fix some other kind of government and, you know, do something to help people, because that's just almost always not the case. And I mean, you don't have to look any further than home and see the way that people are being treated here by our government. Whether it's, you know, the 750 people so far that have been killed by cops this year, or the massive prison population, massive amounts of poverty. Look at any number of these indicators and you'll know that we're not out there fighting for democracy. I mean, shit, the U.S., according to recent studies, is an oligarchy. It's not even democracy. So we have no business telling people how to run their countries. I mean, it's just complete insanity, man.
Didn't Putin recently said that? He came right out and said, you know, where does the U.S. get its gall, you know, telling other countries how to be a representative democracy when we have such little moral regard for our own people, you know?
Yeah. And you know, one of the ways that the U.S. gets away with pulling the wool over the eyes of American people, American voters and things like that is divide and conquer, right? And we all know, like, the two-party system, and they use a bunch of different things to divide and conquer us, whether it's the LGBT issues or, you know, legalizing cannabis, or whether it's just Democrat, Republican, or East, West, North, South. I mean, divide and conquer is the name of the game, right? And this is what they've been using against us to, you know, keep the status quo going for a long time. Now, one of the points that you hit on this art in this article, Manar, was about how, you know, the divide and conquer scheme really played out in Syria. And I read an article recently about Iraq and how the U.S. used a lot of propaganda and a lot of techniques via the CIA to divide and conquer in Iraq as well, to create a Shia-Sunni divide and turn them against each other. And even they created a divide just within Sunni factions and created, like, started having them fight each other as well to help destabilize the region. Why is it that they do that, and how is it that they go about doing it?
Well, sectarian strife in Syria and Iraq have been very much engineered to provide a cover for a war for access to oil and gas and the money and power that come along with it. And I'm quoting actually my article. You know, with the Middle East, every conflict in the Middle East has been painted and portrayed to the public as a religious fight. This is the oldest trick in the book. It's an Orientalist way of demonizing people across the seas to justify wars abroad. You know, right now we have major Sunni nations that are in power, and they're not actually Sunni. I mean, these countries like Saudi Arabia are engaging in, like, sex trafficking, and they're the largest manufacturer of terrorism in the world. They're police state, they're oppressing, they're beheading people. I mean, none of these things that they're doing are even close to what Islam teaches, but they are, you know, they're wolves in sheep clothing to the people in the Middle East, and they're, even to the people in the Middle East, they're selling themselves as these Sunni states. And the only way to weaken other countries like Iran is to throw this Shiite-Sunni war, that Iran has some sort of agenda to convert every poor Sunni person into Shiite Islam. And so this very thing was used starting in 2001, before the Iraq, before the U.S. invaded Iraq, the word Sunni and Shiite were never uttered in people's mouths in the Middle East. In the Middle East, there was no such thing as Sunni and Shiite divide. So this myth that Muslims have been killing each other for thousands of years is one big lie that has been presented from people like one back in the Fox News media circus. That is one big lie. Before 2001, before the U.S. invasion in Iraq, it was never Sunni Shiite. The perspective was the Persians versus the Arabs. But once a Shiite government was put in place in Iraq, and they were given the power, and they became friendly with Iran, and Iran finally had a new ally for the first time in the Middle East, you know, for over 30 years. Saudi Arabia specifically saw this as a very, very big threat, and that's when we started to see this push for sectarianism in the Middle East. That's when we saw the United States training those Shiite death squads going around in those cities to massacre people, and we saw, Saudi Arabia, for the first time in a long time, oppressing the Shiites in their country. But really, if you look at, there's something called the Shiite Crescent in the Middle East, which is where all of the oil lies across the Middle East, from Saudi Arabia to Bahrain to Iran to Iraq. That's actually where the majority of Shiites coincide in the Middle East. They coincide along all of the major oil and gas-rich areas in the Middle East. Just coincidentally, if they were Jewish, if they were Christian, those religions would be used to divide and conquer, but it just so happens that there are Shiites living across those oil and gas fields. And that's why the Sunni-Shiite divide is highlighted and made the way it is and presented to the public.
Yeah, and so people got to be aware of this, man, because, you know, this is a major piece of propaganda. And not only were they, not only, as you mentioned, were we training both sides of this, you know, quote-unquote religious tension that was more or less manufactured. I read, according to some leaks that I read recently, they were also disseminating propaganda in Iraq to try to pit these groups against each other and create this sectarian violence. So, I mean, this is a really cruel way of warfare, psychological warfare, PSYOP, and that kind of thing that the U.S. government is undertaking over there, all over the Middle
East. Right. And the reason it is, and I didn't even mention this, but the reason this is happening is because, you know, we want the United States and these powers want the people to fight each other. Because that's what divide and conquer is. It weakens people's powers, their influence. People are fighting each other based off of religion. They're highlighting each other's differences, when in reality they should be uniting. And it's all so that countries like the United States can exploit these nations' resources. Countries like Saudi Arabia can control the oil market. Countries like Saudi Arabia, or in Syria, the terror groups can take over the oil fields. And we have UN leaks that were released in 2008 that specifically laid the groundwork for this. A battle is raging over whether pipelines will go toward Europe, from east to west, Iran, Iraq, Middle East, close to Syria, and sectarianism will be used to divide these people, to take control of the resources.
Yeah, and it's really sad to see it take place. And now a lot of people started really becoming aware of what's going on in Syria because of that little boy that drowned, that little refugee boy that drowned.
Right.
And he was a refugee from Syria. I believe he was Kurdish. And he was trying to, him and his family were trying to escape they were in Turkey, but, you know, Turkey's not very friendly to the Syrian people. Obviously, there are many reports have said that they're kind of facilitating ISIS. In fact, recently, Turkey announced, oh, we're going to start bombing ISIS, but what they actually did was they started bombing the Kurds, and that's really sad too. The Kurds have been kind of a stateless people for a long time, and they've been victim of numerous regimes. They're victimized by Turkey. They've been victimized by Saddam Hussein, even in Iran as well. And all these places, you know, the Kurds are always left out of all the planning. And
you can't have a Kurdistan, Nick. I mean, could you imagine if you had a democratic republic in the middle of the Middle East?
Yeah, you know, and it, by all accounts, you would think that, you know, the Kurds would be the U.S.'s ally because, you know, we're all about spreading democracy and that kind of thing. At least that's what they tell us. And the Kurds, You know, it seems like the Kurds have a pretty good grip on that kind of thing, but unfortunately that's not the case. In fact, when Saddam was in power, we helped give him the weapons that he used, the chemical weapons, the WMDs when he had them. We were the ones that gave them to him, and he used them against the Kurds and against the Iranians as well. And of course, that's a whole other side of this twisted history that we have down, you know, in Iraq. And it's just really, really sad to see it play out now. And so part of this entire crisis, of course, it goes back to 9/11 and all the actions we've done since. But Manar, I wanted to get your perspective on ISIS as far as from the way I see it. You know, ISIS is very much, I don't want to sit here and say that we directly created ISIS or anything like that, but there's no doubt that ISIS filled a void that we created in Iraq when we toppled the government of Saddam Hussein. What can you tell us about, you know, the role that ISIS is playing in this entire conflict in Syria and the geopolitics with, you know, Saudi Arabia? I know there's a lot of reports that have shown that Saudi Arabia provided material support to ISIS and things like that. What do you know about all that?
Well, ISIS is definitely the result and the monster child of U.S. intervention in Iraq. And again, we have to really follow this, you know, Saudi kind of and Israeli propaganda in the Middle East. And of course, when I say those two countries, the United States kind of follows through because those are our biggest allies. We sell weapons to Israel and we get our oil from Saudi Arabia. So we have a benefit to follow and go through with the propaganda based on those two countries. But ISIS at the very, very early stages was very much funded and armed by Gulf countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who even according to U.S. Intelligence and according to the CIA and the U.S. State Department, Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Arab nations are the largest financiers and exporters of terrorism. And so when ISIS developed in Iraq first, they were part of al-Qaeda. No one really referred to them as ISIS. It was always al-Qaeda, but they were the Islamic State of Syria and Iraq, or in Iraq at the time. And Mint Press was actually one of the first news organizations in the United States and actually in the world that followed the development of ISIS's growth within Iraq. And we watched them and we knew, we actually, you know, we followed their movements and we saw that they would be entering Syria and to hijack the Syrian revolution to, of course, weaken Syria. So all of that we're seeing from ISIS, they have a trail, and I will tell you exactly where they're going to be headed next. But their trail started in Iraq. Their trail was headed to Syria. They're on their way to Lebanon right now. Actually, Hezbollah has been one of the main forces that has been fighting ISIS for the last, I would say about 4 years. And of course, as soon as Hezbollah began to fight ISIS, the United States designated Hezbollah and the Syrian government, who are both fighting ISIS, as state sponsors of terrorism, and they sanctioned both of those groups, or both of those parties. Meanwhile, our friends of Saudis and our friends, you know, in Qatar were financing and arming them. So I do believe that ISIS is benefiting and basically playing the role that we aren't able to directly play in the Middle East. So they're indirectly providing this push or providing this regime change in the region and destabilizing the region. So this Sunni Shiite divide isn't really being pushed by regular people, and I think that's a very, very big misunderstanding. It's actually being pushed by groups like ISIS, who are hijacking the Arab Spring. They're hijacking people's pursuit for freedom. They're massacring people in mass by thousands, Muslims, we listen to Fox News and they're like, oh, there's a massacre happening against Christians in the Middle East. There's a genocide. And yes, ISIS is targeting Christians, but Christians are a minority in the Middle East. They're actually massacring by the thousands Muslims, Kurdish Muslims, Iraqi Muslims, and Syrian Muslims, and of course Christians as well. And what we're seeing is this new coalition between Arabs and Muslims and Kurds and even Christians joining forces to fight and battle ISIS. But if we actually look at the leaked 2008 U.S. Army funded RAND report, it actually talks about U.S. plans to use groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, which, by the way, are controlling a lot of the oil fields in Iraq. They control a lot of the oil fields in Iraq and in Syria, and they're selling a lot of the oil that they're getting on the black market. But we can, if we look at the reports of those leaked documents, they say, the geographic area of proven oil reserves coincides with the power base of much of the Salafi jihadist network. This creates a linkage between oil supplies and a long war that is not easily broken or simply characterized. For the foreseeable future, world oil production and total output will be dominated by Persian Gulf resources, and that's because the countries that sponsor these terror groups are the Gulf countries. And then the report goes on to say that divide and rule focuses on exploiting fault lines between the various Salafi jihadist groups to turn them against each other and dissipate their energy on internal conflict. This strategy relies heavily on covert action, which means arming of rebels that is seen, and indirectly arming of the rebels. And the United States and its local allies could use the nationalist jihadists to launch proxy campaigns to discredit the transnational jihadists in the eyes of the local populace. So basically, the United States said directly in this RAND report that it would be utilizing groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda to control the oil fields, to sell the oil on black markets at a very low cost, and that way, Saudi Arabia indirectly controls the oil market. And so all the Sunni, supposed Sunni states would benefit from this, and so would the United States.
I mean, that's just, wow. You know, it's sickening to hear this stuff, and you know, to hear what's really going on out there. And now I got this other report here that we covered on the anti-media. It first originally appeared on commondreams.org regarding some of this reaction to the refugee crisis, and of course the Syrian boy and the family that drowned out there, and of course they don't make much in the media regarding the Libyan refugees that are constantly dying and drowning thanks to our toppling of Muammar Gaddafi. You know, what has been known as Hillary's war, and there's a lot made of her emails, but there's not very much made of what she did in Libya. And you know, that's the real conspiracy that nobody's talking about. But we have this report here from Common Dreams regarding some of these politicians in the West, including Tony Abbott, which just lost today, thank God, in Australia, as well as David Cameron in the UK, kind of trying to take advantage of this poor boy that drowned off the coast of Turkey and use it as an excuse to increase Western intervention over in Syria, supposedly against ISIS. But as we covered on the anti-media recently by Dan Sanchez, a lot of this refugee crisis is caused by U.S. intervention, as Manar, you were kind of reinforcing just now. What is your take on this reaction? And also, I also noticed in the media is kind of trying to push it in that direction, where it's kind of leading to subtle calls for more intervention. How do you take that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I've heard politicians call for more bombs on Syria, as if more bombs are going to help these Syrian refugees and the Syrian people escape violence. Politicians are pointing the finger again to Bashar al-Assad, Syria's leader. Politicians are saying it's ISIS. But really the reality is we have to look back at the root cause of this entire crisis and where we got in the first place. And actually that was the whole point of me writing that article, is how in the world did we get in the place that we are today? How did Syria get into the humanitarian crisis that we see today? Because most people haven't been able to follow what's going on. There is absolutely no doubt that the Syrian government has been responsible for a lot of the civilian deaths. I mean, there's absolutely no question about that. But a lot of that reaction has been defensive against a lot of this terror movement within the country. And so while it's been bombing ISIS territory and deflecting from all of these rebel groups and rebel-held areas, many civilians have died in the process. So with the destabilization of Syria, we have to look back at the root cause of this. You know, as WikiLeaks has released and as Julian Assange has explained from these U.S. State Department documents that point to U.S. CIA meddling in Syria. A lot of those who began demonstrating had very good intentions, yes, they were demanding economic change in Syria, just like what we're seeing now in Lebanon. There's a real push for change in countries like Syria and Lebanon and Egypt and countries across the Middle East because people legitimately want more freedoms and they really want real democracy. But the problem is that a lot of these movements have been hijacked. And that's what we saw in Syria, is immediately that movement for freedom, that call for freedom, that call for the Assad family to end their reign on Syria, that was completely hijacked and taken to a completely new direction. And so when the images of the Syrian refugees came out, and that image of Alian Kurdi came out, the three-year-old that washed up ashore on Turkey's shores came out, you know, you have to wonder why the media all of a sudden is caring about the Syrian crisis. And immediately you heard those politicians calling for more bombs and to overthrow the government and for more intervention. But that's actually the whole reason that Syria is in the mess that we see today.
Yeah, and, you know, the sad thing is that there's a lot of anti-refugee sentiment going around. And, of course, U.S. politicians like Trump and, you know, the rest of them are fueling that fire. In Europe, it's boiling over. Looking at Greece, and a lot of it stems from economic issues. Greece is dealing with a huge racism problem right now, and they're, you know, they're killing people in Greece. People, African immigrants and African refugees, I mean, they're treating them really badly because, you know, Greece has a really bad economy, and it's really easy for governments to blame problems on minorities, just like the Nazis did against the Jews, just like Trump is doing against the Mexicans here in the U.S. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's really easy for them to do. Of course, they don't have to take any of the culpability themselves. They don't take any of the blame. It's so easy for them to just blame everybody else. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people, it's not that they're dumb, but it's that they're not informed enough to really understand, okay, it's not, you know, if people were informed in Germany pre-World War II enough, they wouldn't have went and said, yeah, let's just round up all the Jews and kill them. And if people were informed enough here in the U.S., they would understand that it's not the Mexicans' fault that the economy is shitty. And mm-hmm. over in the EU, I mean, they've been dealing with that massive financial system now for years, and it's pretty much robbed a lot of the everyday working class people of their productivity and kind of just made a bunch of people rich. Well, actually, not a bunch, very few people got really rich, and, you know, they've got their own oligarchy problems out there. So, you know, that's one thing to keep an eye out for. I see a lot of Islamophobia in my own feed, and it's really sad to see some of my friends being susceptible to that kind of thing. And you know, hopefully as more and more people listen to shows like this, we can kind of combat that attitude and that just basic level of thinking that is kind of flawed in its philosophy. So hopefully we can roll that all back, because it's just really destructive to any hopes of being in a free world. I mean, we can't be racist against people just because it's convenient to blame them for our problems.
But exactly. I mean, we're being distracted. I mean, we the people should be uniting and looking at our similarities, because at the end of the day, we all want good education, we want food on our table, we want to take care of our family, we want to be able to grow our own food and eat healthy, all of those things. But we're being distracted to be afraid. I mean, fear is the biggest enemy right now. And we're being fear-mongered to look at what's different and be afraid of it, to justify these war crimes, to justify this genocide, to justify this destabilization. It's absolutely disgusting.
Exactly.
That's what happens with religion when you're targeting a group of people because of your religion. Like Ken Davis, I made a comment about they should put her in the Mexican jail, you know what I mean?
we're coming up to the end of the show here. Now, one point I quickly wanted to make was that, you know, Russia decided that it was going to really step in and be transparent about its role in helping the Syrian government fight against ISIS. And the U.S. came out and condemned it and said, you know what, dropping bombs in the region is going to destabilize it. And I was like, oh my God, they finally said something truthful. But they got to stop we got to stop dropping our own bombs there as well. Manar, thank you for joining us. Make sure you check out our website, mintpressnews.com. DB, thank you. Manny, Jake, everyone listening tonight, thank you all for tuning in. Catch us tomorrow, 5 days a week, the Anti-Media Radio. Peace out.
Good night, Nick, DB, Jake. Thank you, guys.
Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.